And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bench with Bubba, episode 718, as we continue our team-by-team previews for the 2025 fantasy baseball season, heading to Kansas City to talk about the Kansas City Royals, a fun young team that made a run last year. Things got good. Big Bobby Witt had another monster season in his third year in the bigs. A lot of optimism to be had there in Kansas City, but then also, you know, there's probably room for growth as well, which will be fun to discuss for our fantasy purposes with a friend of the show. You can find him on the Wire podcast with Adam Howe over there on the Pitcher List Network, a man that is a great time in Arizona, if you can run into him there, and just a man with those cool, cool Hawaiian vibes. You can find him on Twitter at Hasting Kevin. Kevin Hasting, how you doing, my friend?
Oh, I'm doing amazing, Bubba, and much better after that introduction. Thank you so much. Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here. Always love talking baseball with you, and especially if we can talk a little Royals.
Yeah, most definitely. I always appreciate it, the chit-chats we have. Missed you this past year, but I know you had some stuff going on, so hopefully we get to run into each other down the line, play a little golf maybe, and have some fun. But before we get going player by player kind of on this roster, what were your overall thoughts on how 2024 went for the Kansas City Royals?
Well, obviously, I was ecstatic after a 106 loss season, making the postseason and winning a postseason series. It was absolutely amazing. Fantasy wise, it worked out. As we talked here last offseason, I was pretty optimistic about most of the Royals lineup in relation to where they were being drafted. I thought there was still that general consensus that the entire team was horrible. And so there was a lot of value there, and that worked out. On the flip side, there was a lot of luck involved. And JJ Piccolo, the general manager, and Matt Quatraro, the manager, have both acknowledged this, especially with the pitching staff. The starting rotation was healthy all season long. They do not expect that to happen again, and they're trying to prepare for that. Also, the bottom half of the lineup was horrible. The top half was very efficient. You know, you had, if any Pasquantino had not have been injured, Bobby Witt Jr., Salvador Perez, and Vinny P would have all had 100 RBIs. And the bottom half of the lineup, nothing. So one thing I've been looking at this offseason is total plate appearances by team in 2024. And the Royals were near the bottom. That's not good. That means the top half carried the team. So,
yeah, it's a great point. It makes sense when you look at the roster last year and kind of this year. They've definitely added some pieces, but you can still see where maybe some holes lie in this lineup that we'll definitely talk about as we go through. But, yeah, that pitching staff, you know, with Lugo doing what he did and walking, man, that's pretty good stuff. So I can't wait to hear your thoughts when we get into that part of the show here with Lorenzen back and Bubich rumors and all kinds of fun stuff there. So that'll be enticing indeed. But let's start off with the bats and with one of the best players in baseball, one of the best young players in baseball, at a whopping almost 25, just 24 and a half. Good Lord, he's young. Bobby Witt Jr., he's got an 80. He's the second guy off the board, ADP of 1.67, Ohtani 1.33. So honestly, Witt's actually edging closer to Ohtani as the number one pick right now than when we first started doing drafts degenerately in November. So when you're looking at Witt, Ryan and I did our shortstop preview, and it's like you really don't have a lot of bad things to say if you want to, but what do you got on Witt? 32 homers, 31 steals, 332 average, 125 runs, 109 RBIs. Impressive.
Yeah, it was amazing. And he had a couple of hot streaks where it just seemed like every time he came to the plate, it was a minimum of a double. And if not, he was stealing two bases after he got on first base. He just had some amazing hot streaks. Great, great overall numbers. I expect the metrics to come back a little bit, unfortunately. I mean, I know he's still young and he has room to grow, but it was just such an amazing season. It's really hard to project a repeat of that. I find it very intriguing, although they're very, very, by very small amounts, the oopsie projections that Jordan Rosenblum put together using Eno Saris's Stuff Plus model and such, but projecting hitters as well, actually has his home runs and stolen bases going up a little bit. But as we would expect, the batting average coming down, the OBP coming down. And so I see that as expecting a little bit of growth, but also regression in some of those hot streaks that he had at the same time. I have taken Bobby Witt Jr. first overall in a draft. I already had a share of Ohtani, and it was a Gladiator. So I figured that was the type of format where I would bump Bobby Witt Jr. above Shohei Ohtani with the questions with Ohtani's shoulder. That draft was, you know, a month and a half ago when we were a little concerned about that with Ohtani. So I think he is the 1B in most instances. I would take Ohtani first, but I think he's a great number two overall pick.
Yeah, I'm currently in a DC right now where I've been in the middle of the back of every draft so far. I finally had an early pick. Happily took Witt at number two. No questions asked. And starting the team like that is a great feeling to have indeed. Something that could help Bobby Witt's RBIs or even Vinny P's, as you mentioned earlier, is one Jonathan India, who you guys acquired from the Cincinnati Reds. It seemed like he was going to get traded last offseason. That did not happen. Well, here we are as India heads over for Brady Singer, essentially. That could be a discussion point later in the show. But Jonathan India, big-time OBP guy. That's why I make those comments about RBIs for some of these players. You know, he's shown, you know, decent pop, like a 15-15 kind of guy potentially, but tons of OBP. So what's your thoughts on India this year? Because right now we're talking ADP of around 250 at the second base position.
Yeah, at first I wasn't really excited about this trade for Jonathan India. I'm warming up to it over time. That OBP at the top of the lineup is something the Royals were missing last season. And I don't look at this as Jonathan India replacing Michael Garcia, who I'm sure we'll talk about here in a moment. But Garcia is going to move down in the lineup. It still appears that he will be nearly the everyday third baseman. So Jonathan India is replacing offensively in the lineup Adam Frazier and, oh goodness, I'm drawing a blank. Michael Longtime Massey. Rocky that the Royals. No, not Massey. I think Massey's still going to get his time. Hampson. Yeah. Adam Frazier and Garrett Hampson. That's who India is replacing. And that's a huge upgrade when we think of it that way, not of him replacing Michael Garcia at the top and Garcia moving down. They're replacing two big holes in that lineup.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Two big spots there. So like that quite a bit. We'll talk about Massey later, but it is interesting because I want to see how that plays out because you mentioned Garcia or Michael and all that. So it'll be interesting. But India should be locked in the leadoff. Either DH or second, because DH can be fluid depending on what Salvi's doing on a given day. So there will be options. So it gives depth to the Royals, which is great to have, of course. Salvador Perez, who we kind of just mentioned real quick there, first base catcher eligible this year, which is fun. He's going to be 35 years old this year, but there hasn't been a whole lot of slowing down from the big man. ADP of around 72. Are we still buying in on this guy, even though he keeps creeping towards that old older and older for baseball terms?
Absolutely. I am a big advocate, and from, you know, I'm a big fan of Bubba in the Plume, and you and Ryan have talked about this. I am a huge advocate of two of the top 10 or 11 catchers, and that 10 or 11 I'm basing on plate appearances for the most part, and then at the upper end of that group, quality of those plate appearances. I think it's such a huge advantage to get two of these catchers in the draft I'm currently in. I have both Contreras's. That's 1,300 plate appearances. Yep. I will be playing against teams that don't even get to 800 plate appearances between their two catcher positions. I think it's a huge advantage, especially if we get the upper end of his range in batting average, which we can't count on. But we did in 2024, which made him so valuable.
Yeah, I love the Salvi call, especially if he gets more run at DH or first base to keep him getting those at-bats like you talked about. Same with Wilson, who you mentioned is going to play first base. Just brings those guys up to a whole other level when things are all said and done. All right, the big Sasquatch himself, Vinny P. Love this guy. Great Twitter follow for anybody not doing that. Absolutely. These days. Just amazing there. But you know, last year he battled the shoulder injuries, but still played 131 games. He's on 19 homers, 97 ribbies, 262. I love the skill set from Vinny Pascantino. If you're interested in Vinny P, ADP is around 115 right now. What do you think we should expect from this man this year? Because obviously we hope he stays healthy, but we got close to a healthy year last year.
Right. And I expect about what Steamer is projecting him for. I do expect him to hit more home runs than he has yet at the major league level. He was a monster in the minor leagues. And his plate discipline is carried over. Of course, he plays his home games in Kauffman Stadium. That has a little bit to do with the fact that the home runs haven't been there. The rest of his fantasy categories, he's not a guy that's going to steal any bases. You mentioned the Twitter follow. When he had that one stolen base in 2024, he was all on Twitter about his stolen base. He loves it when he does get that one. But we won't see that. But the runs and RBI will both be there. I think those get overlooked once in a while when we're just concentrating on home runs and stolen bases, because it makes sense to us. If a guy has a decent batting average and hits home runs, he's going to have the RBI. If he has a decent batting average and is stealing bases, he's probably scoring a lot of runs. That's not always the case. They don't 100% correlate. Vinny Pascantino is one of these guys that the home runs and may not be quite what we want. The stolen bases will be near zero, but those runs and RBI categories will be there.
Yeah, and I'm kind of excited about his batting average potential of like 270. I think that's a big perk to add on to. Like, he's a good, I think he's a strong four category dude, and he goes in that Tristan Casas world of drafts where I like Vinny P much more in those situations. So yeah, I'm very optimistic, and this is like him hitting cleanup. That's why, again, with the India edition in front of Bobby Witt, in front of Salvi, in front of Vinny P, it just adds on to that situation. You mentioned Mikel Garcia earlier. This time last year, we were all excited, and you dropped a nugget on the show that really opened my eyes to Garcia was going to lead off. And that was glorious for the first few months until he kind of stopped producing, which is like everything fell in line out the gate. But still finished the season with 37 stolen bases, 7 homers, still scored 84 runs. That was a big talking point of him leading off, but only hit 231. Now he moves down in the order. ADP is close to 220 right now, Kevin. Are we buying back in on Mikel Garcia?
I am, and I love this discount. I think oftentimes, as fantasy managers, we will come up with a negative thought about a player, and it's our own fault because we had too high of expectations. Yes, the batting average was disappointing. That's it. And at nearly 240, did it hurt us? Yes, I was expecting more like a 270, 280. So it did hurt. But did it that kill my team? No. And he gave me 37 stolen bases and those 84 runs scored you talked about. So the fact that we're getting a drop in price and his underlying metrics, he hit the ball so hard all season long, right? Towards the end of the year, he had 250 batting average in August and then dropped off again in September after having a great July. His second half was coming around, and then September was just horrible. But he hits the ball so hard with his speed that his BABIP is screaming regression with that massive Kauffman outfield that the opponents have to defend. So I am all back in on Mikel Garcia. He's not going to be leading off. So his projections of right around 600 plate appearances, I think, are accurate because he's going to be lower in the order. But if he continues to hit the ball as hard as he did in 2024 with his speed, I'm not even going to throw in. If he can lift it a little bit, we might get a few more home runs. I think just naturally with his progression, you know, he's still only 24 years old. He will be 25 for the start of the season. I am still of the belief that Mikel Garcia is going to be an above average Major League Baseball player for years to come. And we could get to double digit home runs, projections have him back to a 260-ish batting average. I think that is accurate. So I am all back in on Mikel Garcia, and he's cheaper this year.
Yeah, it's all very good points. Like he outside of what he did everything we expected last year outside of average, like you said. So, yep. And he's dropping a ton because the helium was real as draft season went on with Garcia last year. So, yeah, I've kind of had a blind eye to him, and it's probably a lot to your point, as we do as fantasy players have biases based on things that burned us last year, or I'd have to go back and look. Maybe it's a part of the draft where I'm not looking for X, Y, or Z, but at the same time, especially in DCs right now, Garcia is a second base, third base guy. I got MICI is tremendous, as you know, as that season goes on and as injuries take place, that is a valuable asset as we're playing that game. So might need to reevaluate things. That's why I love doing these team by team previews, just talk about all these guys, because it opens my mind to things that I'm obviously not open to at the moment.
Yeah, all right. Dual eligibility, Bubba, excuse me. I have found myself in drafts, drafting him when I still need a middle and a corner.
Yeah.
And then I still have a bigger player pool as I go forward in the draft. I can still draft a middle or a corner because he could cover either.
That makes a ton of sense. Very, very good point. A player that I want to be interested in, I like parts of it, and then there's parts of me going, no, I shouldn't be, is Hunter Renfro. ADP's 531 right now. That's a part that I really like about Hunter Renfro. Hit 15 home runs over 120 games last year. Before that was 20 or more home runs in every season back to 2017 outside of the COVID year. Hit 229, averages him down for a couple of years. But right now he's penciled in to play rather regularly for the Royals. Now that's the part, do I believe that is the question? And that's where I kind of sit back, and maybe that's why it's baked into his ADP right now. But what are your thoughts on Hunter Renfro? Because he's going to be 32 right now. So he's not that old, but he's getting older, but still a big power source later in drafts if you want to, you know, trust it.
Yeah, Hunter Renfro is, unfortunately, even as someone that is looking at the Royals on a daily basis, still a wait and see for 2025, because right field is a position that most expected the Royals to try to upgrade this offseason. As of right now, he is penciled in, as you mentioned, as the everyday right fielder. And I don't think that will be the case, but every day we get closer to spring training and he's still the one there, it becomes more and more likely. So these projections of less than 400 plate appearances are going to have to be bumped up here soon if the Royals do not make another move. As you mentioned, that the 20 home runs every season prior to 2024, he had 140 less plate appearances in 2024 than 2025. I think he would have got to 20. I think he was pacing right there to what he had done in 2023. The batting average came down a little bit, but right there with what he had done in 2023. Overall, I was a little disappointed in Hunter Renfro, but it really wasn't on him. It was on the opportunity. He wasn't given an opportunity really to just run with it, had a couple of hot streaks. The ADP is what this is all about. At that point in a draft, it's worth a shot, right? Because if he's not going to get the playing time, we'll know that right away, and you drop him and replace him in a fab league. In a draft and hold, he probably gets enough playing time to where he can be helpful when your other outfielders start getting injured as late as he's being drafted. But I still think if the Royals have any moves left in them for this offseason, Hunter Renfro is probably the one that loses out on playing time.
Yeah, and that's the only thing holding me back. So I agree. I think he is the odd man out if they make a move. Like the day we're recording this, Jesse Winker has signed. Okay, that's one more guy out of the way that could have potentially like at least platooned with him type situation. So you're starting to see these guys slowly move away from hurting Renfro's playing time. But I'm with you, even in a DC at that ADP, if he plays 100 games, he'll have a stretch at some point in the DC at that ADP. That'll be quite productive. And if somehow he doesn't, he plays 140 games, like you got a 25 plus home run bat at ADP, after 500 is pretty enticing as well. So that's why I keep looking at him. Like at FPEZ, I even talked about him as a late round guy that you could maybe take a chance at. But I am also in the same boat where I'm trepid when I look at it and I see what's going on. All right. As my good buddy Ryan Bloomfield says, Mount Massey, Michael Massey, second baseman who back problems were a concern last year, but still put up 14 home runs, hit 259. Always some optimism when looking at Massey when it comes to streamability versus right-handed pitching. Right now has an ADP of almost 400 in drafts. Should be the primary second baseman, it seems. But again, I mentioned India's there. A lot of questions on how that all comes together. What are your thoughts on Massey? Is he still worth taking at a pick of 400 with so much uncertainty?
I think there probably is a little more certainty. Unfortunately, it doesn't help a whole lot. I think he is right now, the Royals are counting on him as strong side platoon. And he is young enough, and he has shown some skills in the past. He may be able to play himself into more playing time. But I think going into the season, that's the plan, strong side of platoon. So this is the type of guy that those plate appearances he does get, I think, will be very productive. Even battling the back injuries, being on and off of the IL last season, when he was in the lineup, he performed well on a per plate appearance basis. If this offseason, we never know with back stuff, right, Bubba? It can bug guys for years. We got guys like Christian Yelich finally having surgery on a back issue he's had for multiple seasons, right? So we just never know with these guys and backs. But if Michael Massey's back is not bothering him, he's one of the better strong side platoon hitters out there, in my opinion. It's the type of guy, as Adam and I bring up all the time on the Wire, it's if you are willing to manage a team in that way, it takes a lot of extra work looking at the matchups each week, getting them in and out of your lineup. If you're that type of fantasy manager, Michael Massey could be a value at where he's being drafted. If you're not that type of manager, you don't want Michael Massey, because you do need to be moving him in and out of your lineup.
Yeah, and that's the hard part. That's why I was saying, like, we talked about streaming them a lot on the Fab shows. Like, you obviously do your Fab show on the Wire. Like, there'd be weeks where the Royals would play five or six right-handed pitchers. Like, yeah, get Massey, go do it, make it happen. Like, this is a good week for him. Then there's the other weeks where it's like a three lefty, three righty week. You're like, yeah, that's not ideal.
Right.
So it's like not so much against his skill set. It's more like I guess the skill set could be part of the problem. He is platooned, I guess, in a roundabout way. But yeah, good ball player, young ball player. The consistency is going to be troubling. So works in a DC, actually. I know people hate hearing it, like, oh, the best ball I do, but it works in a DC because you'll have the depth where you can move people in and out. And as the season goes on, you either even take a healthy platoon guy because you just need them. So it works there a lot more.
Absolutely.
A Fab league, like you said, it's going to be tricky, probably better for the Wire situation, but we'll have his moments for sure that he's going to be very, very viable throughout the season in Fab formula. Someone to keep on the radar, maybe not draft in a Fab league, but keep on the radar for sure. Oh man, it seems like every year we have this talk, Kevin. MJ Melendez. I can't quit him. I'm like real close to quitting him, and I can't. I know you're a fan too. Dude's 26 years old. Last year, you know, you look at the quality of contact metrics dropped a bit, but like all the X stats for X stat believers still said he underachieved. It's getting frustrating. Like, I had to drop him last year, but then I look at a near 400 ADP and I'm sitting there going, again, I know this kid can hit. Where is it? So what are your thoughts on MJ Melendez?
Yeah, very similar, Bubba. Yeah, I think we're past the point where we give him a pass because he's working on playing a new position defensively. I think he's going to get his shot this season, but it may be his last one as a starter most days for the Kansas City Royals. Much like Hunter Renfro, he's right now the left fielder for the Kansas City Royals. We don't know what they're going to do the rest of this offseason, but as every day passes, we're getting close. We're less than a month till pitchers and catchers report. So every day it looks like we may see him more and more, projected for just under 500 plate appearances. That's probably fair, as he will sit some days. It's the home runs. Kind of like Vinny Pasquantino, but even more so. I mean, we saw this guy put up monster home run numbers in the minor leagues. He had 41 home runs between Double A and Triple A in 2021. When it was him and Vinny Pasquantino and Bobby Witt Jr. playing for Northwest Arkansas, I went and saw them play a game when they were playing in Frisco, Texas. It was amazing seeing those three guys crush the ball for a Double A baseball team. But we haven't seen that power at the major league level. The batting averages have been horrendous in spite of improving strikeout rate in 2024. His walk rate went down a bit as well, but it was great to see that strikeout rate get down to around 25%, and he only hit 206. So I think the leash is getting shorter with MJ Melendez. He's a watch list guy for me. Somebody that I would keep an eye on. If he starts to get off to a hot start, I would throw that dart in Fab because it may just click. He's still 26 years old, just turned 26 years old. So I'm not giving up on him completely, but I am giving up on drafting him in most instances.
Yeah, we're almost pretty much on the same page there, I'd say. Yep. I don't want to draft him. I really don't right now because it has been rough. But then there's that last little part, and Ryan doesn't accuse me, but he always says that's where him and I differ a lot is young players. I still believe like they showed a skill at a certain level. Like I can't give up on him just yet. 26 is still very young. Like if he was getting towards like 29, 30, yeah, we'd see you, buddy. Like he's probably not in the bigs at that point. If this is all he's doing. But at 26, I'm still there. So I'll be watching like you to see and hope. I'm hoping he can figure it out for all these years of saying he can.
Right. And Steamer, yeah. If you look at his Steamer projection, you know, close to 20 home runs, close to 60 runs, close to 60 RBI, batting average bouncing back to mid 230s. There's value in that. I mean, this is a guy that you and Ryan will be talking about and Adam and I will be talking about on our Fab shows throughout the season, depending on matchups, because there's value there. I just don't want to draft it.
Yep. 100% agree with you on that one. A player I have been drafting a lot, weirdly enough, because of his ADP of 525 over the last 12 drafts, and that's Kyle Isbell. And not sexy by any means, folks. But another guy, I know we keep saying it, but the Royals are great for Fab Week pickups. Kyle Isbell was one of those guys week in and week out because the Royals did a lot of platooning is why this comes into play. But again, he had 8 homers, 11 steals, 62 runs, hit 229, but played 136 games. Key part, played 136 games. He's got like double-digit power and speed upside, it feels like, and should play quite a bit again, barring another move by the Royals. So I've been very invested at his price tag as a depth outfielder in DCs. What's your thoughts on Kyle Isbell? Because you can totally tell me I'm wrong for that.
No, I think he's perfect for DCs because his defense is going to keep him in center field most days. He's not going to have a full plate appearance projection. That's not for not starting games. That's for getting pinch hit for or pinch run for. It seems weird saying he would get pinch run for, but when you have Dairon Blanco on the roster, he can pinch run for anybody. That he's missing out on plate appearances late in games. He's going to be the starting center fielder most days, I would say. And so in a DC, when you got a guy double-digit home runs, double-digit stolen bases, 240-ish batting average, you'll take that all day on your bench in a DC for when you need him, right? Yep. But another guy as far as Fab Leagues, just on my watch list, I loved it when they drafted him out of UNLV, and I thought he would do a little more offensively. Right now, as a Royals fan, I'm just happy with his defense and what he does do offensively. But, you know, if he takes a little step, then we're talking mid-teens home runs, 20-plus stolen bases. Then he becomes much more interesting. But right now, I'd say he's similar to MJ Melendez with more guaranteed playing time. So he makes him even more appealing in the DCs.
Yep, the playing time is the key for me in that one. Is there anybody else we're talking about? I know there's Freddie Fermin, who I like as like a third catcher, but it all depends on Salvi playing DH or first base more for that to kind of to plan out. You mentioned Blanco. Is there anybody else worth looking at for fantasy right now in the hitting side of things?
I don't think so. I wish I could say Nelson Velasquez, and I know you were a fan as yeah. well. The last offseason just fell apart, and he didn't perform very well at AAA when he got sent down either. Now, he's still 26 years old. We may still see something, not counting on it. I am a big Nick Lofton fan, but that is a major league utility player that I'm a fan of, so probably not a lot there in fantasy unless there's injuries and he falls into a spot. Freddie Freeman, you mentioned my favorite spot to actually draft Freddie Freeman as my third catcher in a DC where I drafted Salvador Perez. If Perez gets injured, Freeman is the guy. If Perez doesn't get injured, he'll play first base now and then, DH now and then. Fermin's still going to get a couple starts a week to where in an emergency, even with Perez still there, I could use him as my C2 in a DC if I had to. So a DC where I drafted Salvador Perez is where I'm drafting Freddie Fermin.
Good point. Good point on that one to put that all together there, because I do like Fermin's skill set, but playing time is the question at the moment. All right, let's head to the mound. And one, Cole Reagans, that if you are a pitcher list contributor, you need to appreciate Cole Reagans, because ace is going to ace, as Nick Pollock would say. Reagans backed up his first campaign where we saw some glimpses when he came over from Texas, looked good with his starts with Kansas City last year, 32 starts, 186 and a third innings. That was a big question. Even when we talked on the show last year, was what innings can we expect from him? He exceeded what I thought in a big way. Ratios were great. Strikeouts were great. Basically, dude's a beast. ADP of 50. Are we still in on him, or is there any concerns still with the guy that's transitioned to starting recently and took that big jump?
I'm still in. Now, typically, I haven't been drafting pitchers there yet this season. I will get to that point, but they're also going to move up. He may still go ahead of where I begin drafting pitchers typically. But anytime I see Steamer project a guy for a 3.5 ERA, I'm excited, because Steamer is the projection system that I trust most when it comes to ERA. It's so volatile, but in my mind, over the years, their conservative ERA estimates have been closer than other places I've seen. And conservative is a key part of that. When they're projecting you for a 3.5, I get excited, because I start thinking, ooh, this might be low threes. And it was 3.14 last season. The rest of his projections are right in line with what he did last season, and I don't see any reason why they shouldn't be.
Yep. No, I'm with you. That's why I'm buying in now. We saw the innings last year. I'm like, okay, if he gets hurt now, he gets hurt, but they're going to let him run, and I'm good with it. And again, that was a trend, like you started the show. That was a trend with the starters in this rotation. They let him go. That was kind of the thing. So I obviously, Reagan's much higher on the let it go scale than some other guys are about to talk about here. Like one Seth Lugo, the 35-year-old Seth Lugo, who threw 206 innings last year after throwing 146 the year before, after throwing 65 the year before that, a 3 ERA, which is bonkers. Strikeouts weren't like crazy, but they were good because of the volume Lugo put together. But man, ADP of 176, not crazy, has gone as high as 135, which is nuts to me. But 176K conversations can be had. What are your thoughts on Seth Lugo? Because that was just I think, 98th percentile season probably from Seth Lugo.
Yes, and it was the health. He was healthy all year and went out there and went deep into games all year. We know that is something he's capable of due to his large pitch mix. And I was just looking at the draft I'm currently in, because I knew he went recently mid-12th round of a 15-team league. Mm-hmm. So right in line with what you're saying, I had begun to look at him at this point, but I was not ready to pull the trigger on Seth Lugo at that point. I think I play in a quality start league. That's the leagues where, yes, where I'm more interested, because he's going to go 6+ innings, and there's not very many of those guys left. I think in 5x5, which is what we're typically talking about, he's probably going a little early for me, and I'll just sit back on my couch and root for him as the Royals play this season. But in a quality start league, I bump him up a few rounds.
Yeah, like similar underdog where you get points for quality starts. I love Lugo in that kind of format because you get him super late, fill the void.
It's similar to your guy Logan Webb in San Francisco. Yes.
Right? Perfect. And honestly, that's an interesting discussion. Like Webb's done it so many more times, which makes it interesting. But I just mentioned Lugo's ADP of 176. Oh wait, learn how to type, Bubba. Webb's ADP is 103. There's like a 70 pick difference between the two. And honestly, if Lugo just stays healthy,
they're very similar.
Yes, if he stays healthy, it's very similar. That's a great comp. Good. Honestly, I have not made yet, but I think it's probably because Webb's done it like perennially for a while. Mm-hmm. But what's to stop Lugo from doing it like one or two more times? So that's very, very interesting. And it's similarly this pitcher, Michael Wacha, who I always make the joke since I kind of feel like I link him with Adam Wainwright. So I think he's 40 years old. He's not. He's 33, which is still getting older in pitching terms, but not crazy. And it's just the most boringly consistent pitcher in baseball year after year. Got to 166 innings last year, was great, but sub 3.35 ERA for three straight seasons. Similar strikeouts to a Lugo, just fewer innings, but an ADP of 265. So, like, I love the boringness of him in certain formats. I'll say that much.
Yeah, it's getting to the point now, three consecutive seasons, like you brought up, that what do we question now other than how many innings will we get? I think 166 last season is probably about pushing it, and the projections seem to agree with that. They're bringing it down from that to right around 160 for the season. But, yeah, he's going to outperform his projected ratios. He's one of these guys for whatever reason. The quality of contact he gives up. I like Ryan. I believe that is a skill. It's a skill we don't have good ways of quantifying yet. So when we see a guy like this three consecutive years outperforming his xERA by a run or more, you finally just got to say, okay, this is what we're going to get. I buy in. You know, he's older, he's 33, but you know, that for a starting pitcher, that's not old in my book these days. I think these guys, especially the ones that aren't flamethrowers, as they're approaching their mid-30s, they're learning how to pitch better. I like these guys. I think where he's being drafted, Wacha is a great pitcher to round out the back end of your starting fantasy rotation.
That's the biggest thing. He's rounding out your rotation. Like in a 12 team, he might not give you the upside you're hoping for. 15, like he's perfect for a streaming type guy on your bench, a bench streamer. Like he's perfect for that. You don't have to start him every week. You can, though, and that fits beautifully. And I love him in DCs just because when he's healthy, he's going to pitch, and knock on wood, going to pitch pretty well. But I like that a ton.
And along with that, the three consecutive years of ERA, three consecutive years of a whip under 1.2. And this later in drafts, that whip gets overlooked and is harder to find.
Great point. As I know, using the draft thing Ryan made from our Patreon, that my whip is always an issue. Always. That is a big problem with me. And I try to make a point not to have it an issue, and I still can't figure that out yet. I guess just I just don't take pictures early enough, I guess, is my problem. All right, Michael Lorenzen comes back to the club this year. He signed, I believe it was a one-year deal to rejoin the team. Lorenzen threw 130 innings last year between two ball clubs. Strikeouts were down for the second. It's been down for a few years now, I'd say, but a 3.31 ERA combined with the two teams he was on. He got you the 1.24 whip, so he's around that 1.2 to 1.25 situation. But what makes him interesting to me, Kevin, his ADP is 5.72. You're not paying much for a guy that, again, quote unquote, if barring health, is going to pitch every fifth day for now for the Royals. So what's your thoughts on Lorenzen?
Yeah, that ADP is the key. And even in a fab league, I think he's worth a late round dart to see how the season begins. One of the biggest things with Michael Lorenzen to me is how much he enjoyed this team. Playing for the Kansas City Royals. His interview after this signing on MLB Network, he brought up the clubhouse and how fun the clubhouse is. And I couldn't agree more. You got guys like Bobby Witt Jr. and Vinny Pasquantino, and we're not even mentioning yet probably one of, if not the best clubhouse guy in baseball in Salvador Perez. So that is huge for players. These guys are human beings. He's back on the team he wants to play for. He also commented on how they help him work on getting better every day, whether it's going to be working towards a long relief role or staying in the rotation. So I think that's huge, the fact that he's in the spot he wants to be. And right now, Roster Resource actually has a six-man rotation. I haven't heard anything of the Royals looking to go with a six-man rotation. However, it wouldn't surprise me with the comments both the GM and manager have made on how lucky they know they were with the pitching staff staying healthy last season. I think Lorenzen is in this rotation, at least to start the season regardless, but there's more than just these six guys that Jason has listed on Roster Resource, because Kyle Wright, they signed to a two-year deal knowing he would not pitch in 2024. If he's coming back healthy, he's in this mix as well. So even if Lorenzen is pitching very well, it may not always be in the rotation. So, but at his draft price, it's worth taking that chance. And if he's a long reliever, you replace him.
Yep, and that's a great point about Kyle Wright, kind of the forgotten man. His ADP is 573. If you want to see how that goes coming back from TJ, not a bad dart as well. Basically the same ADP as Michael Lorenzen. I'm going to group these last two together because you mentioned the whole six-man thing. It feels like they're either going to battle for the fifth spot or who knows what's going to take place as things go. But you got Chris Bubich, who had that kind of pedigree, the prospect discussion coming up. Injuries derailed things, but it's looked really strong out of the bullpen recently, and they said they want him back in the rotation. That's kind of what I've even heard that. And you got Alec Marsh, who had his moments last year. He was quite serviceable as a back-end starter. He had a couple hiccups, but quite serviceable. Bubich has an ADP, and this is what's really interesting, with Lorenzen's ADP at 572. You got Bubich's ADP at 360, Alec Marsh at 497. So both going before Michael Lorenzen. How do you kind of look at those two guys as they battle it out for the back end of the rotation, or maybe even kick Lorenzen out of it?
Yeah, I think Marsh will get his starts. If they skip guys, or if Bubich or Kyle Wright does make the rotation, he may be the odd man out, but he would still be on the major league roster. He would get spot starts and be a long reliever. He's tricky. He's a streamer for me on fantasy teams. He had some really, really good outings against really good teams. And once in a while he'd throw up a stinker versus a team that you would think he should go out and handle pretty easily. That kind of contradicts my he's a streamer take, but I think it's more coincidence on whether it was the good were against good teams, and the bad a couple of times was against teams you thought he could handle. But that's the type of guy he is. And hopefully in 2025, it works out in the matchups we think he'll be good is when he is good, because I think he's a streamer. Bubich, I know they're going to give him at least one more shot at being a starter. I wish they wouldn't. He was amazing as a reliever. Over a certain time period towards the end of the year, I don't remember the exact stat that somebody posted, because this was months ago, but he was one of, if not the best reliever in all of baseball for a couple of months last season. Why mess with that? I know he's coming back from injuries, and that's getting a lot of the blame for him not being in the starting rotation already a couple of seasons ago, but his velocity really went up when he went to the bullpen, and we know that happens, but it was quite a bit, like over three ticks, if I'm remembering correctly, and I'm certain I am. So why not leave him there and let him cut it loose in those short stints? If you have Bubich and Hunter Harvey comes back healthy and Lucas Erceg to close it out, that's back to our Herrera, Wade Davis, and Greg Holland that we had versus your Giants back in 2014. We loved that back end of that bullpen. And I'm of the opinion I'd like to see Bubich stay there. I understand that they're probably going to give him the chance to start. So drafting him at that draft price, I'm fine with it, whichever way it goes. He can be very valuable. He's the type of reliever with great ratios and strikeouts that can be valuable to our teams, even if he's not getting saves. Okay. So if I'm drafting him that late, if he ends up in the bullpen, he probably remains on my roster that I'll play in place of, you know, a seventh, even a sixth starter some weeks and get value there. If he gets in the rotation, I'm going to be a little leery. I'm really going to keep an eye on that velocity. It would be amazing if the Royals have another awesome starter to add to Reagans and Lugo and Waka. I just think he's probably better in the bullpen, but if it works out as a starter, great.
Yeah, and I'm in your camp here where, like, I see these guys look so good in the pen, and I get it. They want to move back in. It's been a big thing lately, like Ronaldo Lopez and you're down. Listen, mm-hmm. And for every guy that it works, it seems like four or five probably don't work. We just don't talk about him as much type thing. Jordan Hicks came back with the Giants, and I was waiting for him to break down. He finally broke down, but he looked great early. Like, that could be the Bubich situation when all things are said and done. And I had Alec Marsh last year was like one of my top four or five most rostered players in DCs. So I was all over that kind of value. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. Is going to be the case, but I think Bubich in that pen, especially because you can get Bubich, Harvey, Ursig with these pitchers. We mentioned that, you know, maybe you do limit them to six innings, some starts. Now you go to this boom, 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 and life's pretty good in the back end of those games, as you obviously know. You mentioned Lucas Irsig, who, again, I had a ton of shares of last year, thinking, okay, he's going to either get some saves in Oakland if they move Miller around or Miller gets hurt, whatever. Did not expect what took place, where he gets traded and is a genius and just amazing. Excuse me. But he looks like he's the guy, and you got to draft him with the pick around 90, 95 right now, if you like him in draft. So are we buying in? Because you mentioned the name of Hunter Harvey, who many thought was the closer when they traded for Harvey. Turned out Irsig was there, and Irsig earned it. So are we sticking with Lucas Irsig?
Yeah, I am, and I'm excited about it. I'm not excited about how high all relievers get drafted this time of year, but I am excited that I can wait a little bit, and Irsig is still there. So it was amazing to me, as good as he was in Oakland, and he got a couple of ninth inning opportunities there in Oakland, not many because of Mason Miller, but he actually got better when he went to Kansas City. That I didn't know that. I didn't anticipate that he might have another level. He was so good in Oakland, got even better. The bigger point is towards the end of the season, he was the only pitcher in that bullpen that the Royals trusted. That is huge. I think he's the ninth inning guy all season long in 2025. And that's what we're looking for when we're drafting the first, you know, 10, 12 relievers off the board. We want that they're going to get that opportunity on a daily basis.
Yeah, I'm with you. I have a lot of Irsig as my RP2s right now. Been a big fan of that. And I'm hoping that stays that way. Like you said, he's the guy. I will ask though, Hunter Harvey has an ADP of 605. Are we in on that for Hunter Harvey, just barring anything happening to Lucas?
It's worth the spec. And yeah, he would probably be the next guy up in spite of what I said about Chris Bubich. If Bubich does not end up in the rotation, Harvey might have competition there. But as of right now, with the Royals giving Bubich that opportunity, Harvey would be the next guy up, I believe.
All righty. This team, for years, way even before we started doing this show together, was a young team that had prospect depth. Things were brewing, and they had their runs. And even the 2014 was a prospect team with Moose and Hosmer and company coming through there. So it's a trend, and it says a lot to the front office that when people might get frustrated with them, they're doing stuff. So you almost got to, like, let the process work, where a team like myself, the process hasn't really worked in a long time in that situation. What do we look at for prospects right now with Kansas City for potential fantasy value this season, if any? Because maybe they're just out for now.
The biggest guy is their most recent draft pick, and that's Jack Caglione. That guy just crushes baseballs, and his first round in some winter League baseball. He has picked up right where he left off at Florida. He is crushing baseballs. He did get a non-roster invitee to the Major League spring training camp. That got some people excited. They need to temper that excitement, in my opinion. This does not mean we're seeing him on opening day. I don't even think we see him prior to September, if at all, in 2025. But he is definitely the guy we're most excited about. As far as guys that we could see in 2025, I mentioned Nick Lofton. He's no longer prospect eligible, but probably still fits that bill. On a fantasy level, less excited about him than I am for real baseball, being the utility player. Blake Mitchell, catcher at high A last season, he had a really good season. 18 home runs, 26 stolen bases in 111 games last year over A and high A. He ended with only 20 plate appearances high A. He's still really young, but this is a guy for dynasty players out there to keep an eye on, especially if that speed holds up at all as a catcher. High K rates right now, that's what we're used to seeing that. Also walks quite a bit, but K rates above 30% so far in the minors. He'll have to bring that down, but I think he's somebody to keep an eye on.
Yeah, very interesting. Like the Jack Caglione talks, I've heard many excited. I'm with you. As long as Vinny P's healthy and Salvi's healthy, they're not interrupting that situation. So it'll be real tricky to see how that plays out. All right, my friend, last question I have for you. What are your expectations for the 2025 Kansas City Royals?
I expect that they will make a run at a wild card as they did in 2024. However, with the caveat, the bottom half of the lineup does have to perform better because there was quite a bit of luck involved, not only with the pitching staff staying healthy, but with the timely hitting of the guys in the top half of the lineup. That's not something you can always count on. The bottom's going to have to pick it up a little bit. And I think guys like Mikel Garcia being down there, that's already an improvement towards the bottom. MJ Melendez, if we get what we're waiting for, Bubba, that would help a ton. I still do think they bring in one more guy, probably a corner outfielder, and either MJ Melendez or Hunter Renfro loses quite a bit of playing time. Overall, I'm still fairly optimistic about many of these guys in fantasy due to their ADP. You know, a ton of these guys you brought up, it was 400 and 500 ADP. That makes them worth a shot. The top four guys in the lineup, India, Bobby Witt Jr., Vinny Pasquantino, Salvador Perez. I think they're worth where they're being drafted, but they're not undervalued like they were last season. We have to pay for them now. So that's where I'm at. We'll make a run at a wild card, hopefully. And in fantasy, at least the top half will be valuable to our teams.
And that's the fun part about the AL Central is it's pretty wide open. A lot of teams that you could see making runs, and you also can acknowledge where there's holes on all of those teams that could ruin the runs.
Absolutely.
It's pretty open and for at least, you know, 3 to 4 teams out there. I'm not going to name the other one. You guys can do that yourself. I actually recorded a show with a couple days ago, but it's going to be fun out there in Kansas City this year. And I want Bobby Witt go 40-40. I think that'd be awesome. I think it's in his potential, and it's just wild. He's so fun. But all right, my friend, we're going to wrap it up there. Before we head out of here, remind everybody where they can find you and what you got going on.
Yeah, I'm over at pitcherlist.com, On the Wire podcast with my co-host Adam Howe, who is amazing, running the entire podcast network for Pitcher List. And our episodes drop Sunday mornings. In the off season, we're a little flexible about when we record. We have made the decision for those that would like to join us live on YouTube. Friday evenings will be our recording time in season for the shows to drop on Sunday. So if you want a little head start as you're working on Fab, or just want to hang out and chat with us on Friday nights, approximately 9:30 p.m. Eastern, that's where we'll be all season long.
You guys check it out. If you're not, for some weird reason already, it's an awesome show with Adam and Kevin, two good people, obviously, and a lot of fun and a lot of good information over there on their On the Wire show. So go check that out.
PitchCon coming up, Bubba.
PitchCon's coming up. It is coming up. I can't wait to hear the assignments. Ryan and I pitched an idea to Nick. We'll see if it pans out or not. Who knows? But it should be fun. Should be fun. Always is great fundraiser. So hope everybody comes and supports that as well.
I believe Nick is going to allow Adam and I to do our episode 200 live, like we did episode 100 live at PitchCon a couple of years ago.
Yeah, that's awesome. Sweet. That'll be really, really cool. So we'll be checking that out, of course, and having some fun there. But make sure y'all follow Kevin on the Twitter at HastingKevin and on the Wire podcast. And until next time, this was Bench with Bubba, episode 718. Catch y'all later.